When your company earns unlimited 2% cash back on all purchases with Capital One, that's serious business. So, Steven at SandCloud got a serious business card, the Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One.
We used our 2% cash back to help build our retail presence.
Savvy, Steven.
And we get big purchasing power, so our business can spend more and earn more.
The Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One. What's in your wallet?
Terms and conditions apply. Find out more at CapitalOne.com/SparkCashPlus.
Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production. Now available on Apple Podcasts, Podcast One, Spotify, and anywhere else you get your podcasts.
There is a place that is spoken about only in whispers. A dark area that spawns the beginnings of urban legends. A place where anything can happen, and usually does. During the light of day, it hides just outside of view. But when the sun goes down, spirits, creatures of the night, roam free, and things do go bump in the night. It is in every state and every country, and there is no escaping it, no matter how safe you feel behind your locked doors and latched windows. So we invite you to turn down the lights and turn up your radio while we join Dave Schrader and Tim Dennis, your hosts, on a journey into the darkness on the edge of town.
Hello and welcome. You're tuned into the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Darkness Radio. I'm your host, Dave Schrader, along with me, Tim Dennis. Hello, Tim.
Howdy.
How you doing today, sir?
Doing pretty good.
Hey, we've made it through another week. We've survived the COVID crisis 2020 so far.
Oh,
I'm glad.
So far, yeah.
Right. You never know. It's bizarre out there. I am getting emails. We've been putting up a lot of prayer and healing requests. Please keep an eye on my Facebook page because we certainly could use everybody's positivity. I don't care if you're a witch, a warlock, a sorcerer, a sorceress, a prayer warrior, an energy worker, a McDonald's worker, whatever you got, send it and help these people out that are requesting help, because we've had a lot of fallen friends entering the hospital over the last couple of weeks here. Strange illnesses, COVID, and other things striking. And we just could use all the positivity we can possibly come up with. So please keep that in the back of your mind. If you're not already following us on Facebook, please do. And you'll find links to both Tim and I at darknessradio.com. All of our social media links are posted there for you to reach out to us. It is a Supernatural News Paris Share Day, Tim, and we've got some stories to share from around the world and a couple from our listeners. Let's start with those, shall we?
Sure.
I messaged this to Tim on Facebook, and he wanted me to send it to you, so here goes.
He did,
I guess Brandon just didn't want to share it with me. He thought, let's just, you know, forget the Dear Dave, Dear Tim, forget the Dear Tim, Dear Dave. I'm just sending it to Tim.
Well, it was
F Dave.
It was kind of out of the blue. It was like all of a sudden I'm sitting around, I'm doing my thing, and all of a sudden, boom, I get a story out of it. The story didn't even have a Dear Dave or Dear Tim. It just said, here's my story. And I went, whoa, would you like to actually hear this on the air? And he said, yeah. And I said, well, why don't you send it to Dave at darknessradio.com?
Yeah, that's the way to do it. Reach out to me at darknessradio.com. Did you know there's another way to reach out to me too, Tim? There's one other way you could be a part of this show. Did you know that?
I did know that, yeah. But why don't you tell them, Dave? Yeah.
Yeah, should we tell them, or should we, you know? Let's go ahead and tell them. Listen, we have a phone number. It's our Voices from Beyond voicemail, 651-300-4977. 651-300-4977. We know you're listening. We see tens of thousands of downloads per episode. And I don't know why you feel you need to share or not share. Maybe it's just our listeners are fascinated by the paranormal because they haven't had their own encounters. So it's getting a little thin pickings. We still get emails all the time, but it's just that people don't seem to call in. But we love hearing your voices. Listen, Tim and I, we get tired of just hearing ourselves. We want to hear you and your lovely, screechy, crazy, nasally, happy, sad, whatever demeanor you bring to your story. We want to hear your tales of ghosts, UFOs, Bigfoot, monsters, myths, legends, Ouija board, angels, demonic encounters, mystery sky meat from Kentucky. You'll know more about that tomorrow.
Yeah.
But if you've got weird stories to hear and share, we want to hear them on the show. So give me a call, 651-300-4977. That's our Voices from Beyond voicemail. You can leave your story and we'll put them on an upcoming episode. But Dave, I tried and then I got disconnected, so I didn't call back. Well, call back, because if you just pick up where you left off, Tim will take those pieces. And unfortunately, we've had some calls like that where you start telling the story and then it cuts you off and you don't call back in to tell us the rest of the story. So we don't air them because there's no natural wrap up on there. So if you call in, share a story. If your 3 minutes ends and you still have more to say, just call right back. Say, Tim, it's Dave again. Here's the rest of my story. Pause a second and then go into the story right where you left off. And Tim will edit them together and we'll be able to share your entire tale. 651-300-4977. That's the phone number that you want to call to be a part of the program, or just email them to me and be lazy and I'll read them for you here at dave@darknessradio.com. Whichever works best for you.
Sure.
The email begins, I wanted to share a paranormal story that is somewhat now becoming a theme in my family. My grandfather grew up in the backwoods of Virginia. I mean, way backwoods. Turn off the dirt road and onto the dirt path backwoods. When he was a teenager, a lot of the boys in the area would take a bus that would bring them to Washington, D.C., where they would perform day labor. A lot of this labor was helping build apartments and other buildings in and around our nation's capital. My grandfather was too young to go at the time, being only 13 to 14 years old, but his older brother would regularly make the trip. One night, my grandfather was woke by his brother in the middle of the night around 2 a.m. At first, he was furious. It was the middle of the summer, and his brother knew he had to be up in just a few hours to tend to his chores. He dismissed his brother and told him to leave him alone so he could get some sleep. But his brother was persistent in trying to wake him up, proclaiming that he needed to tell him something. Finally, my grandfather popped up from bed and looked his brother dead in his eyes and told him that it better be quick with whatever he had to tell him because he was tired. His brother told him that he was pushed off a building he was working on by another man and that they were going to make it look like an accident, but it wasn't. It was because of a disagreement. My grandfather started laughing, dismissing this claim, and told him he was up drinking again. He then rolled over and went back to sleep. The next morning, my grandfather awoke and went out to tend to his chores before breakfast. As he was making his way back to the house, he saw the sheriff's car parked out front. He walked in to find the sheriff explaining to his mother how her son had lost his balance while working on a building the night before and fell to his death. Flash forward to my teenage years. Two things my grandfather hated the most was trying to call my parents only to get their answering machine. He would always rant and rave about how useless they were, and many times our machine would capture his colorful language about it on the recordings. The second thing he hated was how my brother and I would always be playing video games. He again thought they were a waste of time, that we should be outside playing. On the night he passed away, in June of 1997, we had a storm roll through. He had just moved into a new house, and we hadn't put up any blinds or curtains in some of the rooms, and I remember the lightning keeping my brother and I up. A few times the power would flicker on and off, but nothing too crazy. The next morning, however, we found out the storm had fried two objects in our home, the answering machine and our Super Nintendo. We like to think that this was his way of saying goodbye and we better go outside and play. My third and final story just happened only a few weeks ago. My Uncle Dennis, Uncle D as we called him, passed away unexpectedly on July 3rd. Uncle D was my mom's brother and my aforementioned grandfather's son. He had a special relationship with my two-year-old daughter, Paisley. She called him Dee Dee and he called her his little one. On the night of his death, Paisley came crawling into my bed with my wife and I, as she sometimes did in the middle of the night. I pleaded with her to lay down and told her, Mommy's asleep, Sissy's asleep, the kitties are asleep, and that she needs to go to sleep. She then pointed to the hallway outside her room and proclaimed, D, Dee Dee's up? We didn't think anything of it until we found out that he had passed the next morning. Making things weird for 2 days later, as my wife and I were getting her ready for bed in our room, she again started saying that Dee Dee was in the hall. We told her, no, honey, Dee Dee was in heaven. But she was persistent and kept pointing. After another, no, Dee Dee is in heaven, from my wife, the Alexa in our room kicked on unprovoked and said, good night, little one. My wife and I both jumped a mile in the air and started to cry. Paisley kept sitting on our bed laughing, proclaiming once again, Dee Dee was in the hall. Feel free to use it or not. I just wanted to share. Thank you for everything you do by keeping us entertained and helping us find an escape during the last few crazy months. And that comes from Brandon. Brandon, thank you for sharing that story. What an amazing set of stories. And he kept them all in one email, Tim.
Yeah, I know, right?
None of this. I've got more, but that's for another day. Hi, Tim.
Hi.
And Dave, sorry, Tim gets a mention first,
as
sometimes he's forgotten about. I'm from London, England, the email goes on to say.
Aw. Hi.
I would like to start off with, I'm a great fan of the show. Watching old shows while waiting for new ones to be updated. I work night shift, so I listen through my shifts. Shifts, Tim.
Plural, yeah.
My experience is a kind of weird one. I don't know what to call it. Dream visitation, but I'd like your opinion on this one. When I was a child, probably about 6 or 7, I had a very vivid dream. I woke up in my dream from the sound of a storm. Me being really scared of storms, I went to my mom's room to get in her bed, as I normally did when I woke up in the night. As I entered her room, the TV was on, and I noticed on the TV was a black and white movie of a woman holding a knife. At that moment, I poked my head around the door and noticed her bed was empty. My heart was beating so fast. It's as if I knew something was wrong. I then backed out of my mom's room and went to the stairs and looked over the wall where the stairs go down into the kitchen. The kitchen was on the left as you reach the bottom of the stairs. When I looked over the wall, I saw a shadow of two people in the kitchen. It's as if someone or something was waiting for me. I then heard a woman's voice, but it wasn't my mom's voice. It was calling my name in an almost sing-song voice. Reese. Reese. I went slowly down the stairs and entered the kitchen, and that's when I saw her. My mom hanging from the ceiling with blood pouring out from her neck and stomach, and saw the woman that was calling me. She was tall and slim, had messy hair and big, bulging eyes. That she also wore a Victorian-style dress. She was holding a blood-covered knife in her hand, and she was smiling. She then said with her evil smile, "You're next, you little brat," and let out a horrible, witch-like laugh. I then woke from my dream to find that same woman staring at me in the face with that same evil look. I covered my face with my blanket, and then after 10 seconds, I took a peek, and she was gone. I remember this experience like it was yesterday. I still can't figure out what kind of experience that was. Did the woman put that vision in my dream? What do you guys think? Thank you for the amazing show. From a living fan across the pond. Well, Reese, the skeptical side of me would say this is one of those hypnagogic, hypnopompic experiences where you were having a very traumatic, scary dream to begin with. And death dreams always seem to stick with us a little longer. But then when you wake up in that first few minutes or, you know, even first few seconds, dream and reality kind of blend over one another, like you're putting a transparency over a picture. And you see this image, even with your eyes, but it's probably more of a projection of your mind's eye. And this being, which was so terrifying to you, was still part of it because it was the focus of that moment before you woke up. So that would be my guess, that it was nothing more than just a horrific nightmare, especially if nothing preceded this or ever happened again afterwards. So that's all I can go on is this one specific story. Tim? Do you have a thought?
The one thought I have is, and you pointed it out, was it ever recurring? Did it ever come back to you? Because if it was a recurring dream, then you have to look into whether it's psychological or paranormal. And if it comes back to you and it recurs again with the same set of circumstances, with knife, and if it continues to attack your mother, then you have to look into why it's attacking your mother and the different psychological reasons as to why, or paranormal reasons as to why. Dave brings up a good point that there are different reasons why the brain works things out psychologically in your dreams, or as to whether it's paranormal. There's a lot of different reasons as to why this could have happened, and Dave breaks out the sleep version of it. I tend to think that this might be more psychological because you bring a television into it. And it sounds like your brain was working something out at the time. I don't know that this is necessarily paranormal, especially since you brought out that it happened once. If it was recurring, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, it's tough to say, but thank you for sharing.
It is tough to say, yeah.
All right, really quick follow-up on last week's show. You were talking with Robert Major.
Yeah.
And his sister, Antoinette.
Oh, yes. I've heard from quite a few people. This past week.
Right.
Yeah.
And you know, what's funny is people always, they don't know how to take those episodes, but we keep bringing Robert back because we do hear from people. Like, we got an email forwarded to us. It says, "Hello, Robert. My name is Angela. I came down a few years back from the Bay Area. My daughter, who was very young at the time, came to see you. I just wanted to say a big thank you to you and Antoinette. Since having attachments removed from us and the house, life has been good. I have since lost over 100 pounds, so many doors have opened for me as much in a positive direction in life. I was able to figure out which way to go in life and what path to go on since seeing you. I was accepted into the RN program and have one more year to go. I still do get regular visits from Dad in my dreams, and they're all great visits. Thank you again for helping my daughter and I." And that comes again from Angela. We've gotten emails like that through the years. From listeners that have heard Robert and reached out to Robert. And that's why we continue to have him on, because as strange as some of these stories sound, we get some really remarkable responses to his visits and what he and his sister are able to do.
And if I can answer back just real quick, because I've had quite a few emails this past week, and I want to address something just real quick. Now, Antoinette, during the show, brought through Lane, which was a spirit guide of hers, who passed away during the 9/11 incident, conflict, whatever you want to call it, in one of the towers. And Lane was an African-American teenager, okay? And with that, you know, Lane has an affectation to his voice, and people had an issue with that. Okay. Here's the deal. Whether you bought into it or whether you didn't buy into it, a lot of people wanted to know what I think. What I think doesn't matter. Okay. When someone says to me as an interviewer, why would you ask, you know, or why would you let someone channel a spirit guide? Why wouldn't I? You know, why wouldn't I? If someone says, "Would you like to hear from a spirit guide?" Well, absolutely, I want to hear from a spirit guide. I want to hear from the other side. I want to see what. If someone says, "Would you like me to show you my wares?" Well, of course, I'm gonna say, "Of course, I want to hear from that." What I think doesn't matter. What you guys think when that person presents their wares, that's all that matters. If somebody gets something out of that, then that's all that matters. That's all I care about. And if you want to tell me what you think after the show, that's great. Whether you believe it or not, that's great. Then you've weighed in. Now, personally, I sat, I listened, I weighed in on what Lane had to say. The one thing, and you and I discussed it, Dave, off air, and I appreciated the skepticism that you brought to it, and we can discuss it here if you want. There was one thing that happened at the end, at the very end, as Lane was saying goodbye right before the commercial break. Lane had basically told his story. Lane had, and we'd wrapped up that part of the interview with Lane. I was going to commercial break, and I tried to keep it short and sweet. You know, Lane made his appearance, told his story, and right before, it was pretty much unsolicited. I didn't ask for any, you know, any advice about me or anything like that. I might have asked one or two questions that slanted that way. If I remember right, I think I used myself as an example for one question. And out of the blue, Lane says, "You're going to want to go get your blood pressure checked, like right away." And I went, "Oh?" And then I tried to blow it off because I wanted to go to break. And I didn't want to dwell on it. The reason I didn't want to dwell on it was because this is a condition that I haven't told anybody in my family about. I haven't even told you about until after the show. And I think I mentioned something just real briefly on a text conversation between you and I. Lately, I've had a real severe issue, and it was after we were done doing the Jericho cruise and I was in Florida for a week. I'd come down with what my doctor suspected was COVID, and I've been having issues, after effects with it afterwards. And it had to do with, I have a heart defect, a PVC deal, which is a third downbeat. And ever since I had that sickness, I haven't been able to control the PVCs. The PVCs are happening now with every heartbeat. And I used to have extremely low blood pressure from the different pills I was on for chronic pain. But now my blood pressure has been getting higher and higher and higher and higher. And even the medication I'm on for the PVCs, which was controlling my blood pressure, isn't working. So I haven't told anybody this. Nobody. I've been keeping it to myself. I went out and bought a blood pressure cuff 2 weeks ago to keep monitoring it. So I didn't tell a soul. Nobody knew. Nobody. And every skeptic that got on me this past week, I told them that story. But I hadn't told a soul. So everybody was like, "Come on, did you really believe that bunk? Blah, 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 blah." Now, you brought up to me, well, you know, you're a middle-aged guy, you're overweight, it's an easy shot.
And that was not me rubbing anybody's nose.
No,
but
no,
it was
no.
Just,
no.
That's why I don't usually allow mediums to do readings for you and I, because so much of it can be gauged on just looking at us and our temperament on the air.
And that's very fair. That's a very fair, skeptical way to look at it. And you're absolutely right. It's a very fair shot. I could sit back and go, you know what? You should go get your blood pressure looked at. But it was a right now. You need to go get it looked at right now, immediately, right now. Which I would tend to agree with because it was a sudden turn. It wasn't like this was a problem that has been steadily happening over time. This was like the worm had turned almost immediately. Like, I've had low blood pressure because of these meds for a long time. Then all of a sudden, within the last couple of weeks, boom, all of a sudden it's elevated. So, you know, it was kind of a weird message. It was just a very weird matter of fact. But then this Lane got very insistent about it. No, you need to go like right now, like right now. So it was kind of like, okay. Yeah, I got it.
So it really sticks out to you because even though you were kind of questioning, was Antoinette really channeling this spirit and this affectatious voice that was coming through, you know, you're questioning it because you're a logically minded person trying to make sense of it as well. But the fact that they threw this curveball at you on something that happens to be going on medically at this moment, something you haven't talked about, that really kind of blew you away.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, and like everybody else out there, I take a lot of things with a grain of salt and I'm very skeptical. So much like the audience, I'm skeptical at the time too. And I think that was just a little shot across the bow at me to say, hey, you may be very skeptical at this point, but here, let's throw a little something at you just to make, you know, throw you a little off your game just to make sure you're not too skeptical. So there you go.
Very cool. Well, that's a good segue for our first news story. Sadly, Naya Rivera, the Glee actress, her body was recovered this past week after going missing out with her 4-year-old son swimming. Her 4-year-old son was recovered. She was not. And she was missing for quite some time. Mm-hmm. And this story goes down as probably one of the most sent to me stories of the week. Heather Morris, one of the other actresses of the TV series, was very vocal about something interesting this week. Heather Morris is holding on to faith as she reflects upon the death of her friend and former Glee co-star Naya Rivera. Rivera's body was recovered from Lake Peru near Los Angeles, California, by authorities on Monday. An autopsy performed by the Ventura County Medical Examiner's Office ruled that her cause of death was an accidental drowning. Morris was one of the several Glee cast members who visited the lake during the search for her body. Now, this is where it takes an interesting turn, Tim.
Okay.
Her body had been missing for quite a while. There was no clue as to where she was.
Right.
Morris says she believes it was the calling for Rivera by her and her castmates that loved her that led to her body being found. Well, that's interesting to say, but let's go on further. We called her out of the water and she came. If you're not a believer, I don't know what more proof you'd need. Morris tweeted along with a picture of 12 of Rivera's loved ones all holding hands as they looked out onto the lake. So you've got these 12 cast members all out there with their COVID masks on, facing the water, mm-hmm. calling forth this girl to come back. The photo includes Glee cast members Kevin McHale, Amber Riley, Chris Colfer. Rivera and her son went swimming during their excursion. He was wearing a life jacket, but she wasn't. And he got back into the boat, but she didn't. That's what the sheriff's department is reporting. The child was found safe on the boat 3 hours later by another boater, according to KCAL-TV in Los Angeles. Now, according to Ventura County Sheriff Bill Aib, Josie told investigators that his mother helped him back on board. He then looked back and saw her disappear into the water. Now, according to Aib, the water is between 35 and 60 feet deep in the area where Rivera's body was found. And there's heavy brush and trees on the lake bed there. Low visibility played a factor in how long it took authorities to find her body. Captain Eric Bushow of Ventura County Sheriff's Department told Fox News the crew suspended its efforts for a search at 10 p.m. Wednesday, the first night of the search, due to the dark conditions. Celebrities have shared touching tributes of the actress since her passing with her ex-fiancé, rapper Big Sean, most recently taking to his Instagram with a heartfelt message. Rest in peace, Naya. God bless your soul. Thank you for blessing us with your talent. So on and so forth. But what's interesting is that the cast members and loved ones standing there called on her and said, you need to come home for your family and for your child. There needs to be closure. And while they were there, it's my understanding from the story, within moments, the sheriff's department found the body.
That is interesting.
And again, why it's important to note is that there's these trees under the water. There's a heavy current, and she may have gotten tired swimming and trying to help her son, mm-hmm. and her feet may have gotten tangled up in some of this underwater debris, and that may have pulled her down. It's also important to note that those trees probably would have kept her from coming up. It's fascinating that once they called for her to make herself known, she showed up.
They were saying on TMZ that the visibility when they first went out to search for her, it was like 7 to 9 inches. Not only the brush and it's a man-made lake, that lake that she went swimming in, and that there was complaints, or there have been complaints over the past 2 years by local residents that they should have more signage around that lake that states that it's a swimming hazard and that you shouldn't go swimming in this lake whatsoever. They called off the search that first day, in broad daylight, there was only 7 to 9 inches of visibility in the water itself. Yeah. So it was near impossible conditions to look for the body.
But it's so strange, right? That the cast and crew come together united and call for her and her body suddenly surfaces.
Yeah.
So very interesting. Here's another strange story, and it comes from our own backyard here in Minnesota. I just love the title of this story, the headline from Care 11 News. Mystery chicken takes up residence at teen's grave. The little red hen arrived at the grave of Aiden Miller just before the one-year anniversary of his death. This is in Kellogg, Minnesota. A surprise visitor to a rural Minnesota church cemetery is the talk of the surrounding countryside. We don't know where this thing came from. She just showed up one evening, actually, Dan Miller said. It's been 3 weeks now since a little red hen took up residence on the grave of Dan's son, Aiden. The chicken has not left. It seems crazy, Dan says. There's probably 1,000 other stones in the cemetery, but it refuses to leave this one. Aiden Miller was fishing with friends when the seemingly healthy 16-year-old collapsed from a suspected cardiac arrhythmia. Next Wednesday, July 22nd, it'll be 1 year since he passed away, Karen Miller, Aiden's mom, points out. The approaching anniversary only serves to amplify the impact of the mysterious arrival. She's brought a lot more smiles than tears these past few weeks, Karen says. No one knows where the bird came from or why it showed up when it did. Aiden's parents do know their son loved animals and was especially fond of the chickens his family used to raise on their farm. Now the chicken they've named Angel has become especially fond of Aiden's family. Come on, Karen says, coaxing the bird. Angel jumps from the ground to the bench at Aiden's gravesite and stands next to Karen. There you go, Karen reassures the chicken, which begins plucking the flowers now within its reach. We thought, well, if she's going to hang out here, we probably better bring her some food and water, says Karen. So Angel now has a small bowl of chicken feed at the base of Aiden's grave, not far from the box Dan built for her to nest in. Still, the Millers worry about surrounding farm fields teeming with hungry foxes and coyotes. There were coon tracks all over the grave one night, she said. She was still here in the morning, though, Karen says. I think Aiden watches over her at night and keeps her safe. Dan and Karen are faithful members of Immaculate Conception Catholic Church, which stands across the road from the cemetery. But beyond the brick walls and a chirping hen, they've also found what they needed to help them through July 22nd and more. Because, Karen says, about a month ago, I was diagnosed with breast cancer. On a recent visit, for the first time, Angel felt comfortable enough to hop on Karen's lap. Karen couldn't help hide her delight as the bird stood nonchalantly on her leg. It's the sort of spirit lifter Aiden would have wanted for his mom as she deals with one crisis after another. I've always said I don't believe in coincidences, Karen said. I think it's something bigger than that. In a country church cemetery, there's no need to ask which came first, the chicken or the faith. And I just thought that was a really beautiful, interesting little story from our own backyard here in Minnesota, Tim.
Yeah.
So we go from an angelic chicken to an evil genius cat in this next story, Tim. More proof, if ever, Tim, that cats are dicks. Or are they? Again, this is another half glass, half empty, half filled, depending on who you are and what you're thinking of it. The headline says, "My damn cat is an evil genius. He got my wife pregnant." If that doesn't sell headlines, I don't know what does.
Mm-hmm.
A couple welcomed their first child last year, but she had a difficult pregnancy, which saw her on bed rest for several weeks. Their son was born 2 months before his due date, weighing 4 pounds, 2 ounces, but thankfully he was happy and healthy. Due to the nature of their first pregnancy, they decided to hold off on having another child for a couple of years. He said, "My wife started birth control shortly after giving birth to be sure we had no surprises, but the pill tends to make her very sick, and she wanted to lose weight, so she stopped taking it. We thought condoms would be enough." But, Tim, that's where the cat comes in.
Okay.
He said, "Our cat is an evil genius. I seriously think the greasy orange little shit is still smarter than our nearly one-year-old." I love that that's his comment. "Our cat is an evil genius. I seriously think the greasy orange little shit is still smarter than our nearly one-year-old. Uh-huh. He gets into everything, and I do mean everything. No door, drawer, or cabinet can stop him, and he knows where something is. He wants it, and he'll find it. It's so bad that for weeks after adopting him, I thought there was poltergeist in the house because each morning I'd wake up to find every single cabinet door in the kitchen wide open. So how did I F this up and let him impregnate my wife, you ask? Well, my first F up was storing my condoms in the same drawer as the Q-tips, which he loves to get into and shred apart. He must have seen the box of Q-tips in the drawer when I put my rubbers away, because not even an hour later, I stumbled upon a horrific scene of chewed plastic straws, shredded cotton fluff, and shiny gold condom wrappers scattered across the gaping drawer that once contained them. He cleared up the destroyed Q-tips and put the condoms back in their box, thinking nothing of it. We ended up having some sexy time later that night, and I vividly remember stumbling into the dark bathroom, opening said drawer, and blindly fumbling around in the dark to pull out a condom, as was our regular routine, thinking nothing of what had happened earlier. But fast forward a few weeks, and his wife was complaining of nausea and tender breasts. We immediately shoot each other a concerned glance, as this isn't our first rodeo, and she felt the same way before discovering her first pregnancy. She still had a half-empty box of tests from the year before and decided to take one just to be sure, followed by another one, and another one, and another one, all of which showed positive. I ran over to the bathroom drawer where I kept the condoms, dumped out the box on the counter, and started to inspect each miserable little foil square. Sure enough, several had notable scratches, teeth marks, and even full-blown punctures in them. Which leads me to F up number two, not checking to see if the cat had chewed any of my rubbers when he had gotten into that drawer. But although the pregnancy was a complete shock, he concluded his Reddit post by saying, "Can't wait to explain to my son or daughter one day that they owe their existence to our family cat." So there you have it, Tim. Mm-hmm. Is it a curse or a gift this cat bestowed upon its family?
Well,
I know what your thoughts are, Tim.
Yeah.
Just saying we might need to take a different look at it this time. You don't seem you're unswayed, Tim. You absolutely hate cats. I understand. Cat lovers, send your email directly to tim@darknessradio.com, or you can give him a call at 612.
Email's fine.
Email's fine. You know what? Or perhaps you want to drop off a cat at his house to teach him they are.
I don't,
stop at 314.
No. I don't need a cat. If I wanted a cat, I'd own one.
But maybe if one of them dropped off a loving cat to you, you'd get over your hatred of cats. So at 314.
Dave.
What?
I'm set. I'm good.
Wow. Okay.
I have no pets clause in my lease. Yeah.
I see. Mm-hmm. All right, let's do another quick email before we go to break. Hello, Dave and Tim. Hi.
Hiya.
My name is AJ, and I'm a longtime fan of the show. I've been listening since 2008, and I finally decided to give back for the years of paranormal goodness. I used to work at a boarding school as a janitor, maintenance worker, and the building itself is an old building with a lot of tragic history. And it's very haunted. The building started as a simple hotel. But when most of the building burnt down, it was rebuilt into a luxurious resort. As businesses slowed down, the resort was eventually sold and converted into a prison. From the prison, it was turned back into a hotel and finally bought and converted into the boarding school where I am employed. It's over 100-year history. The place had its share of deaths. During the fire of the original hotel, the owner and his family perished in the flames. With the construction of the luxury resort, the new owner built a golf course and placed one of the 18 holes right on top of a sacred Indian burial mound common to the area. I know it's a common ghost story trope, but it is documented in historical records. During the time of the resort, two murders also occurred on property. The first was a maid who worked at the resort and was shot and killed on the sun porch of the building by her husband, who was believed she was cheating on him with another resort employee. The second was a young African-American boy who worked on the resort collecting water from a nearby natural spring for the resort guests. Unfortunately, there's not as much information about him other than he was also shot and killed. When the building was converted to a prison, the third floor of the north wing was converted to the isolation area of the prison. This was created by building four iron cells, which remain there today, as the third floor was sealed off and never remodeled. A young woman serving time in the prison hung herself in one of those cells after carving her suicide note into the wall of said cell. The suicide note is still there to this day. Fast forward to today. The place is very active. The fire alarm goes off and is accompanied by the smell of smoke. Somehow, after investigating what triggered the alarm, no one can find anything and the smell is gone. During one of those alarm triggers, a staff was clearing the main floor of the building. When she entered the dining hall, she saw an elderly couple sitting at one of the tables. Before she could say anything to the couple, they just faded away. On the same floor of the dining hall, several staff and students have reported seeing a woman in a white dress walking the sun porch in main hallways. I personally believe she was the murdered employee. Everyone that sees her says she just is all of a sudden there and then just as quickly gone. But she's always there long enough that it's more than just a glimpse. The second floor, where the student dorms are located, well, they have their own hauntings. These are more residual from what I've gathered. The floor is split into two wings. On the north wing, a black mist is often seen floating down the hallway. On the south wing, a man in a hat is often seen leaving the last dorm room, walking across the hall through the locked off doors that lead to the now dilapidated third floor. The spirit is just like a movie on replay. He never changes his behavior. He simply crosses the hall. Students down the same hall and most often the same room mentioned above report things flying forcibly off their dressers. They also have reported seeing faces appearing, peeking at their windows, which are located 50 feet from the ground. On top of that, the faint sound of 1920s and 30s big band music can be heard coming from the main lobby. I myself have heard this. Students say in dorms directly below the area where the isolation cells are held, they often hear footsteps, the rattling of chains, and the slamming of the heavy prison doors. I won't say that they don't know what's on the third floor, but I know the school doesn't advertise it either. I keep in touch with people that work there, and they recently added a security camera in the building, specifically in the basement. Most of the basement is closed off for maintenance, laundry, etc. There's a common area where students can gather and watch movies. Apparently, these cameras recently caught an orb, Tim. An orb!
No.
In parentheses, it says, I know. Floating from seat to seat, almost like it was Goldilocks trying to find the perfect place to sit. After the orb had tried four or five chairs, it vanished, Tim.
No.
To end this on a positive note, I, along with some other staff, managed to sneak a spirit box onto the third floor after another male staff and myself attempted to talk to the spirit of the woman who had killed herself. The two female co-workers who were with us took over. The spirit box started going crazy. Most answers were just yes or no, but at one point a voice came through the static that said something to the extent of, "I am here to watch over the girls. I'd love to tell you the name of the building, but because it is still a functioning school, I'll need to keep that information to myself." And that comes from AJ. Oh, AJ, you tease. But thank you. What a great set of stories. Again, we appreciate that. Thank you. Huh. Interesting stuff, Tim.
Yeah.
Let's take a quick break. When we come back, a man finds a witch bottle, Tim, and what's inside is terrifying. We'll talk about that next, right here on Darkness Radio.
What are you doing in your free time? I hope you're playing Best Fiends. I certainly hope you are. If you're not playing Best Fiends, well, you should be. It's hours of fun that you can enjoy anytime. Best Fiends has challenging puzzles you can solve. It's got cute characters you can collect. And it's got new levels that's added every day to the game. I know I'm hooked. If you're anything like me, I know you're going to be too. You don't have Wi-Fi, you say? Well, no worries. You don't even need Wi-Fi. You don't need an internet connection to play Best Fiends. I'll tell you what I love about the game. Of course, the cute characters. I've got 20 out of the 154 possible characters you can have. I got my favorites. I got Dennis. I got Gordon. Dennis is like a cute little grasshopper character I just added this past week, who's got some horizontal bombs. And you got Gordon. He's like my little scorpion character. And then I got Pop. He's like a cute little purple. He's kind of like a spiny goldfish character. Those are my little guys that I tend to be partial to. I got my characters. You've got the puzzle solving. I'm seeing things in different ways now thanks to Best Fiends. My problem solving has gotten much better thanks to Best Fiends. There's lots of great things about Best Fiends that I love. Lots of great attributes that I've developed thanks to Best Fiends. I've gotten my friends and family into the game. They love playing Best Fiends. And of course, I've got lots of Facebook friends that I'm playing with thanks to Best Fiends. I am, of course, hooked up through Facebook. So I love playing the game with my friends and family. And of course, leapfrogging them and giving them gifts through Facebook, through Best Fiends as well. there are millions of downloads of Best Fiends everywhere. So everyone is playing this game. You should be playing this game too. I don't know why you're missing out on playing Best Fiends, but you got to get on this game as well. I'm telling you, the game is constantly changing. This isn't just a static game that once you've played all the levels, you're played out. It's a unique and exciting puzzle game unlike any other. Best Fiends is constantly updating this game. They update the game monthly. There's new levels, new events. It never gets old. There's deserts, there's oceans, there's mountain ranges, there's new slugs, there's new enemies, there's new levels. Every time I turn around, the puzzles are changing. It never gets old. I'm always facing something new. And I tell you, I don't think I've ever seen the same board twice. And I'll tell you, you think you may need hours and hours and hours to play this game? You don't. If you've only got a couple of minutes, you could be in some random weird place. Maybe you're waiting for your coffee to brew. Maybe your partner's watching TV and you only got a couple of minutes. Pick up the game, play it for a couple of minutes, put it back down. It's okay. Maybe you only have time to play a quick level or two. Do it. Just get in, play the game, get out. Go ahead and do it. And again, you don't have Wi-Fi access. You don't have cell data. No big deal. Pick up the game, play it, put it back down. It's okay. Best Fiends is convenient and accessible and ready for you at all times. Best Fiends has thousands of levels already with new levels, events, and characters added every month. It's hours of fun right at your fingertips. And again, you can even play offline. With over 100 million downloads and tons of five-star reviews, Best Fiends is a must-play. Download Best Fiends free on the Apple App Store or Google Play. That's friends without the R, Best Fiends. Hey, it's your old buddy Tim, your producer and co-host of Darkness Radio, about to tell you about how I've been skipping trips to the grocery store and eating better with America's number one meal kit, HelloFresh. You can get fresh, pre-measured ingredients and mouth-watering seasonal recipes delivered right to your door. That's right, right to your door, skipping the grocery store, the trips to the grocery store, and making home cooking fun, easy, and affordable again with America's number one meal kit, HelloFresh. Let me tell you, HelloFresh's recipes are incredibly delicious. Oh my gosh, I look forward to seeing that box show up right there on the doorstep every week and getting those wonderful recipes that I know I'm not going to put a whole lot of effort into. There's no stress for me. It's all right there on those cards, and it's so wonderful just to put it all together and look like a chef. Of course, I'm far from a chef, but just looking like it's so effortless. And it is. It's so effortless. It's so easy. And it doesn't take that much time at all to put together the wonderful recipes from HelloFresh. HelloFresh offers so many recipes to choose from each week to help you break out of your recipe rut. There's something for everyone, including low-calorie, vegetarian, and family-friendly recipes every week. HelloFresh offers fresh, high-quality ingredients every week for a super flavorful experience. And you know, over 90% of ingredients are sourced directly from growers to ensure the freshest recipes are delivered to your door. Now, HelloFresh offers contactless delivery, which is important in this day and age, to your doorstep for easy home cooking with the family. HelloFresh cuts out stressful meal planning and grocery store trips, so you can enjoy cooking and getting dinner on the table in just about 30 minutes or even 20 minutes with their quick recipe options. And you can save up to 28% by using HelloFresh versus your grocery store shopping trips. HelloFresh is also incredibly flexible, so it fits you and your family and your lifestyle in this incredibly hectic time with the coronavirus, with the pandemic, with everything that's going on, with the changing landscape that's going on in today's society. What's nice about HelloFresh is they will easily change your delivery days or your food preferences whenever you need to. They'll also allow you to skip a week whenever you need to. Also, feeding your family has never been easier. They've taken in provided larger box sizes for more servings and more savings. Also, the great thing that Dave and I love about HelloFresh is they're committed to giving back to the community. Did you know that HelloFresh has donated over 2.5 million meals to charity in 2019? And this year, they're stepping up their food donations amid the coronavirus crisis, which is something we absolutely love about HelloFresh. Now, let me tell you, when you go in to order HelloFresh, there's a couple of recipes that I've made over the last couple of weeks that I've absolutely loved that you're going to want to try. The mozzarella and herb chicken with roasted green beans and buttery couscous is absolutely wonderful. And you may be saying, buttery couscous? Couscous? Actually, couscous is a real good substitute for rice. And it's a little lighter on the carb side, too. That whole dish only takes 30 minutes to prepare. It's really quick, and it's really good for the family. And if you're looking at lightening the carb load a little bit, the mozzarella and herb chicken's really good. The Juicy Lucy Burgers is actually a Minnesota staple. We love our Juicy Lucy Burgers here in Minnesota, and it comes with a tomato onion jam and potato wedges. And actually, that meal in itself is really good, really quick, and takes about 40 minutes. And, oh my gosh, it's so good. And you got to try it. And then if you're looking for something that's also a little easier on the carb side, the seared steak with demi reduction plus garlic mashed potatoes and roasted carrots is so scrumptious. Oh, it's so good. And you're going to want to try that as well. It's a little more on the preparation side, about 45 minutes, but it's so worth it. And it's so delicious. Give it a try. The seared steak with demi reduction plus garlic mashed potatoes and roasted carrots at HelloFresh.com. America's number one meal kit. Now, you may say to yourself, Tim, how do I get in on this? Let me tell you how you're going to get in on this, because we're going to offer you a little something to get you started on HelloFresh. This is the great part. If you go right now to HelloFresh.com/80darkness and use the code 80darkness, that's 80darkness, you'll get a total of $80 off, including free shipping on your first box. How does that sound? Sounds pretty good, right? Additional restrictions apply. So please visit HelloFresh.com for more details. Again, get in on some great, great food, nutritious food, get it shipped directly to your doorstep, and get on a meal plan that's going to help you and your family in these hectic times during this pandemic. I'll guarantee you, once you start skipping those trips to the grocery store and getting America's number one meal kit, you're going to love planning out your meals this way. Give it a try right now. Go to HelloFresh.com/80darkness, 80darkness. And use code 80darkness to get a total of $80 off, including free shipping on your first box. Additional restrictions apply. Please visit HelloFresh.com for more details. One more time, HelloFresh.com/80darkness. Use the code 80darkness for a total of $80 off, including free shipping on your first box. HelloFresh.com/80darkness. Do it today.
All right, we're back. This is Darkness Radio. New Orleans man finds a witch bottle with teeth inside buried in the ground by the Mississippi River, Tim. Yeah, Shane Mears may work as a bartender, but his passion in life lies in the ground. The 52-year-old spends his free time digging for historical relics and interesting knick-knacks, Tim. Knick-knacks.
Knick-knacks, you say.
In areas homes once stood or where bulldozers have tossed the land. Whether it be Civil War bullets or old belt buckles, his treasures have been varied. However, earlier this month, while looking in the mud at Algiers Point on the river's west bank, he found a strange glass bottle filled with hair, an adult tooth, and a pincher beetle, and possibly urine. And that's what it tasted like, he said.
Ew.
I'm kidding. He didn't really try it. In a Facebook post, he explained, located in the area where a home existed in the mid-1800s, and the bottle dating from that time period as well. such an object may have been used as a protection spell for the property. However, he added it also may have been used in a voodoo ritual to cast a different spell. Anyway, it is a rare, creepy, cool find. It's safe to say people in the comments were far more alarmed than Shane. Dude, put it back. I can't stress to you enough. Put it the F back, one user wrote. Especially in 2020. We don't need to unleash any other kind of dark, sinister nastiness on the planet, Tim.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's what the next commenter says. This year's been bad enough. Put it back, dude. Please put it back. As for what he'll do with it, Shane told NOLA, I was thinking of donating it to one of the museums that would kind of be the best home for it. It would be neat if my grandson and granddaughter could go in and see what I found. What do you think, Tim? A bottle with hair, a tooth, urine, and a pincher beetle.
Generally, when a witch bottle is constructed, it has a purpose. And that purpose is not for you to mess with. So put it back. Yeah, put it back. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
There's a mystery, Tim, that's still out there that is begging to be uncovered.
Okay.
Uh-huh. And it's the story of a haunted picture. Well, kind of a haunted picture. I don't know exactly if I'd call it a haunted picture, but it's a picture of something that really can't be explained. And I'm sounding like I'm killing time. It's because I am, Tim, because the article itself is hidden behind pop-up ads.
Ah, yes. Our
I'm
favorite.
Finding no way to close said pop-up ads. There's no, there's now one went away. Finally, Tim, here's another. I can put that away. There we go.
There.
How exciting. Yeah. I just had to put forth the intent for them to go away, and I found a way to put them away.
Oh, good deal.
A mystery of a haunted photo of an ancient castle that still completely baffles experts is back in the news, Tim.
Uh-huh.
Are you ready for this?
I'm ready.
All right. Back in 2009, a man named Christopher Atchison visited Tantallon Castle in East Lothian and snapped a photo of the ruins. The castle, which dates back to the 14th century, is located on a remote headland near North Berwick and was badly damaged in 1651 during an attack by Oliver Cromwell's forces. Tourists take pictures of the fortress all the time, but Mr. Atchison's image has caused quite the stir, so much so that people are still talking about it 11 years later. That's because if you zoom into it, the photo shows a figure in one of the windows, which some to believe to be a ghost, reports Edinburgh Live, Tim.
Edinburgh Live? Yes, sir.
Did you dislocate your uvula?
I did a little bit, yeah.
Paranormal fans have been divided over what the image really shows for years. Some say they see a person in the window wearing a ruffle and centuries-old clothing. Mr. Atchison previously admitted, I was not aware of anyone or anything being present in my picture. Spooky. And it is. It's a really kind of, very clear image. It's almost hard to believe somebody wasn't there. But what's even more interesting is that the photo has been tested and has confirmed that it has not been digitally altered. It is not Photoshopped, Tim. And before you go thinking it could be a tour guide in costume or some kind of mannequin, those theories have also been ruled out by experts. Psychologist Professor Richard Wiseman from the University of Hertfordshire, who studied the picture, said the figure appears to be in period costume, but we know 100% that the Tantallon Castle is not the sort of place that has dummies or costumed guides. So there's really no explanation, and it continues to mystify people 11 years after it was taken, Tim.
Hmm.
Dun, 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 dun. Here's a space oddity story, Tim.
Okay.
A Mexican group claims an alien base offers hurricane protection. Yeah, you heard me right. As communities on Mexico's Gulf Coast brace themselves for what is predicted to be a grueling hurricane season, a group of stargazers in the north eastern state of Tamaulipas are confident that a unique form of disaster preparation is going to keep their city safe. Members of the Association of Scientific UFO Research of Tamaulipas, or ACOT, believe that an interdimensional underwater base of extraterrestrial origin has protected the coastal cities of Ciudad Madero and Tampico from hurricanes for more than 50 years. ACOT's president, Juan Carlos Ramon Lopez Diaz, claims to have visited the base known as AMPAC via astral projection, Tim, which he says he induced through meditation and a pescatarian diet.
Ooh.
It's also recommendable to ascend. Yeah. Hmm. It's also recommendable to ascend ancestral constructions like temples and pyramids that have stairs at a 45-degree angle, he says. Hills sloping at such a gradient will also do if one doesn't live near pre-Columbian ruins. Ciudad Madero suffered 4 direct landfalls in the 20th century, including Hurricane Inez in 1966, which killed 74 people in Mexico alone. Lopez and his allies believe that the base was established sometime after that. Explanations of exactly how and why the alien visitors are protecting Ciudad Madero vary, even among fellow investigators. Lopez believes it's not Amopac itself, but the esoteric power of ACOT's members' belief in the base. The collective mind is charged with the concept, so it generates a large force field of repulsion. There is also talk of a magnetic field and a series of meter-long bars on an aluminum, iron, and copper alloy secretly buried in the seafloor near Miramar Beach at the suggestion of the visitors over 4 decades ago. Others claim that the aliens are only interested in protecting their base, and Ciudad Madero is just lucky that they took a liking to this small corner of the galaxy. This theory fails to explain, however, what a threat a terrestrial weather might even pose to a structure with no form in our physical dimension. Still others simply accept the apparently inexplicable, said Marco Flores, the official former historian of Tampico. If science gives us no explanation, we'll get one from magic, he said. Fantasy is always more attractive than reality. And people are always more attractive at the end of the night at a bar, Tim. Another reality.
That is true, yeah.
Yeah, where magic seems to come into play. The municipal government placed a bust of a green Martian at Miramar Beach in 2013 and officially dubbed the last Tuesday in October the Day of the Martian. And the bust was promptly stolen. Oh. Jaime Masson, Mexico's leading chronicler of UFO sightings and other supernatural events, allowed that southern Tampalucos was a hotbed of extraordinary and extra mundane activity, but said he and his team of researchers were previously unaware of Amapac. He did, however, remark that the theory was curious. However, Dr. Rosario Romero, a climate scientist at the National Autonomous University of Mexico, agreed that Ciudad Madero's streak of hurricane-free weather was interesting, but not that it was inexplicable. She said that Tamaulipas is more likely to see less intense tropical storms, while broader atmospheric conditions, such as subtropical high-pressure systems and the prevailing westerly winds, tend to push major hurricanes north toward the southern coast of the United States. Furthermore, although Ciudad Madero has not been struck directly by a hurricane since 1966, it has not escaped damage from others that made landfall elsewhere. In 2013, the city declared a state of emergency after Hurricane Ingrid caused significant flooding. But it is interesting, Tim, that in an area wrought with horrible weather,
mm-hmm.
this area seems to just keep finding a way to avoid it.
Very interesting indeed. I don't know what's more remarkable, that or if I close my eyes and I just absorb your dulcet tones. You almost transport me there with your impeccable knowledge of the Spanish language.
Thank you. I don't like to brag, but I have watched a lot of Speedy Gonzalez cartoons and feel like I've really grasped the concept.
I believe you have. Yeah.
Where else should we go here? We've got just a handful of stories left. Let me roll through these, shall we?
Sure.
Let's see where this one takes us. Haunted TikTok is the next evolution of internet horror. After hours of scrolling through endless TikToks of teens dancing, couples pranking each other, and dogs being cute, something on your For You page stops you dead in your tracks, according to this article by Jess Joho. Someone is walking around a dark, empty house as text explains that their mom hasn't come home. As they take us through their neighborhood, they realize it's not just her, but everyone has vanished overnight.
Uh-oh.
Hey, kind of serious here. Like, my entire town is missing. I'm not really sure what to do. Is this happening everywhere? The caption reads. clicking on the Where Is Everybody account with over 240,000 followers, Tim, which is about 239,000 more than we have, you discover that someone named Alexander Nielsen has chronicled this phenomena since October 2019. Each video shows more of his empty world, where people have been replaced by shadowy, ghosty figures. After COVID-19 led a wave of stay-at-home orders and widespread panic buying at grocery stores across America in March of 2020, the videos have grown even more dire. Now there's completely deserted highways, too, with captions mentioning food growing more and more scarce. Whether you realize it or not, you've just stumbled into the scary side of TikTok. Now, despite just being an app known for attractive teens going viral with trendy challenges, a sinister niche has been quietly growing since 2018. Haunted TikTok, a.k.a. hashtag horror TikTok, hashtag cursed TikTok, hashtag ghost TikTok, hashtag creepy TikTok, hashtag scary TikTok. Now pulls in anywhere from 1 to 11 billion views. That doesn't even count the stuff without tags. Many different things converge to create haunted TikTok, says Jessica Maddox, an assistant professor of Alabama University who studies digital media and creative media. First, she points out TikTok's short-form horror harkens back to old penny dreadfuls, cheap Victorian-era printed thrillers. More prominently, though, haunted TikTok grew from a legacy of web horror that uses social media to translate ancient oral storytelling traditions into the modern age. Haunted TikTok is just the next iteration, evolving from campfire scary stories and penny dreadfuls, then also digital urban legends like Creepypasta, Maddox explained. Creepypasta, for the uninformed, Tim, which used to be you and me.
Yeah.
Now we're part of the informed. They're horror stories written by amateur writers, often on Reddit, that capture the internet's collective unconscious. While Haunted TikTok started gaining momentum back in 2019, it's now bleeding more into the mainstream here in 2020, when people's general anxiety is at an all-time high in a world increasingly defined by surreal horrors from an intangible threat. It seems Haunted TikTok is just hitting different when it pops up on people's For You page. The pandemic is already like the ghosts that's haunting us, Maddox says. Like all good horror, the haunted TikTok trends prove to us a sense of control over something scary that we don't have control over in our real life. Haunted TikTok contains a multitude of subcategories, Maddox explains. You have viral horror story recappers, ghost tour guides exploring haunted places in their area, folks accidentally capturing paranormal incident they swear is real, and others claiming to document hauntings that they're experiencing, or the more explicit cinematic fictional true storyteller and performance artists like Where Is Everybody? While Haunted TikTok has its own distinguishing features, it all stems from the original Creepypasta legend to become a worldwide phenomenon. Slenderman was birthed from a single post on a forum in 2009, which led to the very popular Marble Hornets YouTube series around him, as well as many popular games, a failed Hollywood movie, and countless other iterations across every social platform. The idea of the campfire story and digital urban legend stems from the tension of its "is it true or is it not true?" theories. I've heard this story from so-and-so, or it happened here to this other person in a different town, says Maddox. Like the oldest folklore and fairy tales, modern storytellers are often inspired and build on one another's work, changing elements of it with every retelling to adapt the story for a different audience or platform. So again, if you are a TikToker, Tim, or a TikTok traveler, where you just go in and watch TikToks, but you're not really posting.
Okay.
You have to go in and look for the different iterations. Again, hashtag horror TikTok, hashtag cursed TikTok, hashtag ghost TikTok, hashtag creepy TikTok, hashtag scary TikTok. They're getting between 1 to 11 billion views. You know, that Andy Warhol, he kind of knew what he was talking about when he said everybody was going to get their 15 minutes of fame at some point.
A little bit. I think he was ahead of the curve on that deal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely ahead of the curve. All right. Let's see. Where do we go next? Oh, a 6-decade-old mystery of skiers found dead in underwear has finally been solved, according to experts, Tim.
Well, thank God.
Are you ready?
The
deaths of 9 Russian skiers in a mystery that baffled investigators and inspired suspicions of paranormal activity have finally been explained after 61 years. The group of students disappeared after setting out in January 1959 for a 220-mile ski trek across the Ural Mountains to Mount Ortnorton, translated in the local Mansani language as "don't go there" or "don't go there." Maybe that's the better way to read it.
Yeah.
Rescuers discovered the frozen bodies of 2 members of the group, led by 23-year-old engineering student Igor Dyatlov, beside the remains of a fire close to their camp at the foot of Kolatskikarabula, or Dead Mountain. Both victims were dressed in underwear despite temperatures as low as minus 40 degrees Celsius, the Times reports, Tim.
Hmm.
Comrades, let me tell you more stories. Another 3 bodies, also barefoot and lightly dressed, were found nearby, and the group's tent had been slashed open from the inside, the paper said. The remaining bodies were located 2 months later when the snow began to thaw. 2 were missing eyes, 1 had lost his tongue, and 3 had wounds that experts concluded were caused by a force equal to that of a car accident or an explosion. Abnormal levels of radiation were also detected on some of their clothing, the Times added. The death of what would become known as the Dyatlov Pass group were hushed up until the collapse of the Soviet Union in 1991. A cover-up that inspired decades-long rumors of natural disasters, yetis, and the supernatural, along with books, documentaries, and films about the ill-fated skiing trek, says the Daily Mail. Some theories have claimed that aliens were involved, while others allege that it was moose and squirrel.
I believe that one, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
They said Soviet students were killed by Soviet missile, or that some other group had KGB connection and were on secret mission to meet U.S. agents, adds the Sun. Armchair detectives have been suggesting that the group from Ural Polytechnic Institute may have been driven insane by infrasound caused by a rare wind event.
Huh?
Pardon me.
Mm-hmm.
But after reopening the case last year, the Russian Prosecutor General's office has concluded there is far more mundane explanation. It's hypothermia, the Sun reports. Investigators, or as we like to call them, investigators, believe that the hikers froze to death after fleeing from their tent in the night to take cover from an avalanche team.
Avalanche.
Huh. Senior State Prosecutor Andrea Kirikov said that while the students did everything right, they were doomed after losing sight of tent, whose ability was 16 meters. They lit a fire and they searched for their tent, but it had vanished in the whiteness after the avalanche, he said.
I've had a couple of beers and had to have some visibility.
They had no chance to survive in such circumstances. However, prosecutors' verdict has been disputed by families of the victims. Yergen A. Cherzanov, a lawyer representing relatives, said they were categorically disagree with the findings and believe the students were killed by an explosion caused by rocket failure. So a case that is formally closed still leaves questions, Tim.
I know now why it's hard for Russia to win a war.
Mm-hmm.
There's no V for victory. It's all victory.
That's right. Today, we call victory over a Dyatlov Pass story, basically, kind of, somewhat.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to go to Weird Norfolk, Tim, for our next story.
Okay.
All right. The ghost of Man Egerton. Okay. Okay. This article says, each time I've seen the nun, it has been daylight with the lights on. I know when she's about to appear because I get a feeling of being cold. What are they saying about nuns, Tim? That nuns are cold? That's as cold.
That is cold.
When the temperature dropped in the boiler room, Mr. Pullinger knew what was about to happen. One might say it became somewhat of a habit. Get it? Nun habit. That's what they wear, Tim. The whimple or the habit is the headgear worn by the nuns.
I don't think nuns can afford headgear, Dave. They take a vow of chastity.
They're giving them. They're giving them, Tim. It helps them to fly.
You didn't get what I did there.
I did. I saw what you did. In what was once a main depot of Man Egerton and Company in Prince of Wales Road, close to Greyfriars Road and King Street, the ghost of a nun was seen in the 1940s and 60s. She took time off in the 50s, apparently, Tim.
Yep.
Enjoying the rock and roll music. In the EDP of December 9th, 1960, the unusual sighting was noted, and a witness, a Mr. A.W.P. Pullinger of Trix Road in Norwich. He was interviewed. Mr. Pullinger, an engineer, told a reporter that he had seen the ghost of a nun in the basement and then the boiler room of Man Egerton three times in 1 year and once before World War II. The nun looks as solid as you or me, and I can hear her as she walks over the concrete floor, rather like a hospital nurse making the rounds on a ward each night, said Mr. Pullinger, who was 52 when interviewed. She always appears at the same spot from behind one of the boilers. She walks across the room and passes through a closed, fireproof door. I wonder if this is what inspired the story of Freddy Krueger and his mom being a damned nun.
That might be.
I don't mean like, oh, that damn nun. Yeah, I mean, it was right. A nun that was damned.
Yeah.
She is dressed in a black or dark gray robe with a white headdress and black shoes or boots. The place she appears from was where a hole was dug a year or so ago for a chimney. Some bones were found during excavations. And they were found to be animal bones that were sent to the Castle Museum. Man Egerton was an automotive and aerospace company with its headquarters in Norwich and was formed in 1905 by Gerald Mann, an electrical engineer, and Hubert Egerton. The company supplied custom-built car bodies for Rolls-Royce, built aeroplanes, Tim, aeroplanes, in the First World War and vehicle bodies in the Second World War. How about them apples? But he says, each time I have seen the nun, it has been in broad daylight with the lights on. I know when she's about to appear because I get a feeling of being icy cold, said the engineer. He added that he felt no fear when she appeared and described how he had first seen her when he was working at night before the war. I was working in the basement when I saw the nun walking across the floor. He said other people have since told me that they've seen the nun in the basement, although not recently. The Man Egerton building, which was largely demolished back in 1993, was built partly on the site where the Greyfriars, or Franciscan monks, built a priory in the 13th century, Tim, back in 1880. Not only was the priory still marked on maps, so was Cook's Hospital, which was built on Rose Lane back in 1692, thanks to the generosity of Robert and Thomas Cook. The latter also built several alms houses for the perpetual habitation of 10 poor old women, as well widows and maids. The women chose to live there and were given an allowance in coal. It was demolished back in 1892 before being declared insanitary. Might Mr. Pullinger's nun have been working in the hospital, or might she have been paying a visit to the priory from the nearby Carrow Abbey further along King Street? Could she and her appearance in the basement be because ground level is the area where considerably lower than it is today? And why was the ghost so solid? Equally, was there a reason she appeared during daylight hours only? Weird Norfolk hopes that other former employees of Man Egerton, once a major employer in Norwich and across East Anglia and the rest of the country, may be able to provide some of the answers. As an aside, a branch of Man Egerton in Bury, St. Edmunds, over the border in Suffolk, also in the 1960s, evening cleaning staff began to refuse to work there after dark, claiming that they were experiencing strange noises and uncanny phenomena. Odd things happened to the Bury showroom. Clocks would run backwards. Objects move when no one was there. This time, however, the paranormal activity was blamed on a poltergeist rather than a nun.
Hmm.
How about them apples, Tim?
Them some good apples.
You like apples, Tim?
I love some apples.
then how do you like them apples? That's it for this week, kids. We're done with the supernatural news element. How about if we do a final paranormal parashare story, Tim?
Sure.
Hello, Dave and Tim. I'm a longtime listener, and I've wanted to say that I love your show. Stay safe out there. Please keep up the good work. Recently, I happened to watch Dave Schrader tell his story on haunted hospitals. I was absolutely amazed. They must have searched for a very long time to find such a talented actors who could accurately portray you and Tim on that episode.
They did. If they haven't. They searched far and wide.
Yeah, just go watch it. It's amazing. So in the spirit of you sharing your stories, it inspired me to share one of my own. Roughly 6 years ago, I was working for a local trucking company here in Fresno. Now, on this particular day, it was a hot July day, sometime between noon and 1 o'clock. I was working, driving the company truck, trying to get my delivery destination. I had just left the company yard only a few minutes earlier and was driving eastbound and down, loaded up and trucking, Tim.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to do what they say can't be done. He's got a long way to go, but a short time to get there. Come on, man. I'll watch old Bandit run. He was driving eastbound on Belmont Avenue towards the 99 freeway. Before you make it to the freeway, there's a string of cemeteries to the south and a crematorium to the north. When I was traveling through this area, there was a stop sign just before I saw what I saw. There were two people standing in the cemetery not far from the road, only 15 to 20 feet from the road. They were what looked like a husband and wife because it was so hot they had an umbrella to help shade them at the cemetery. I could see them so clearly. They were obviously there visiting the grave. The two of them were holding each other in a consoling manner. What I witnessed next bothered me for years. Directly in front of them stood what looked like a man. He was about 6'2", very thin. He might have been in his 20s. He looked very out of place. He was wearing gray sweatpants and a black shirt that was in the style of what a lot of rockers would wear, the sleeves cut off and cut down the sides to the waist. The very first strange thing I noticed is his color was off, much like how you would turn the color down on a TV to the black and white, which made him look very pale, just enough that it was visibly noticeable. I could see him standing on the grave that the couple were viewing. The couple were not reacting to him, not at all. They stood there in their mourning. I focused on that man to see what he was doing. He was clenching his fists, stomping his bare feet into the grass on the grave. He was shaking with his mouth open as he was trying with all his might to yell loud enough to be heard. I saw him so clearly. The stubble on his unshaven face and head, the shadows highlighting his bony ribs and how his clothes were hanging on him. His appearance reminded me of someone who was very sick from a disease that had wasted him away or severe drug addiction. I was traveling past them slowly enough that I could focus on his face. That's when I got a good look at his face. He had the look on his face of fear, dread, and sadness in his eyes. It appeared like he was struggling to come with grips with what was happening to him. Yes, I can admit that he could have been one of the many homeless and drug addicts that frequent the area. It's known for that. As a matter of fact, the area is a very bad side of town. Many homicides and murders have occurred there. Along with gangs and prostitution, even the cemeteries. I'm not saying which ones, but one of them had been caught reselling already occupied graves and removing the occupant to be reburied underneath the nearby railroad tracks. This has happened more than once. The whole thing might have only taken a minute, but this experience has stuck with me, left me with one question, like, who was he? Why was it that I could see him, but those other people couldn't? If he was dead, it must have been recently. Why was he still there and hadn't crossed over? This was the first time that I've seen a full-body apparition, but it wasn't the last. I feel like this was as if someone had opened the door for me to the other side, and now that I've seen it, I know how and where to look. Thank you. And that comes from Jose. Thank you, Jose. An amazing story. We appreciate you sharing that. And boy, heart-wrenching.
Yeah.
Sad and creepy. Well, I've got one last one. It's from Minnesota. Let's get to it. Hey there, Dave and Tim. I have a short story of what I think might be a near-death experience. Dateline, Minneapolis, August 1st, 2007. A couple of my friends and I were traveling back from shopping at the Mall of America. It was around rush hour, so things were pretty slow going. We all had the urge to go get ice cream. We took the Washington Avenue exit on 35 to go find some. For those who aren't from Minnesota, the Washington Avenue exit is the first exit just south of the Mississippi River Bridge. It was still summer for the U, so it was pretty fast in and out. We get out of the place to hear sirens and all of that. We also could find any way to get back on the interstate. We had no idea what was going on. Eventually, we did figure it out, and all three of us were shook to our core. If we didn't have the urge for ice cream, we would have almost definitely been on that bridge. If you remember, one of the scariest part of the collapse was that it was right in the middle of rush hour. And I find a small miracle that only 11 people passed away from that. I don't want to belittle those 11 because that is 11 too many. But with all of what happened, one would assume it would have been much worse. I wonder, have you heard others who had similar urges during that? Thank you for reading. Keep up the great work. That comes from Adam. I actually, on that day, Tim, I worked in Bloomington, lived down the other way, so I had to go out over that deal. That was the bridge I would have crossed every day, right? And I left work early that day because I had a raging migraine, and went home, laid down for a couple hours to nap, got up to watch the tragedy unfold, and it happened right at the time I would have been driving through that area. So I can't say I would have been on the bridge at that moment, but it was right in that time era that I always drove over that bridge. Oof. You know, another really weird thing. I stayed home as a kid, very sick. My head was killing me that day. I remember it distinctly, the day that the Challenger exploded.
Really?
And then September 1st, I had stayed home. I woke up in the morning and I had such a bad ocular migraine, my right eye I could not see out of. It was like a black, wavy mess. I had such a raging headache. I told my wife, I got to go back to bed. My head's killing me. She woke me up hours later screaming, we're under attack. And I thought she meant our house. I'm like, what, what? She's, we're under attack. We're under attack. And she turned on my TV just in time for me to watch the second plane hit the building, the World Trade Center.
On 9/11, yeah.
So I can put myself exactly where I was in those instances. Each day I stayed home or went home early with a raging migraine.
Really?
So it's, yeah, it's like a pre-indicator. So I got to tell you, when I've had horrible migraines, I always kind of watch the news that day to see if something bad happened. But those stand out to me specifically.
When the bridge collapsed, I was still working part-time over at Minnesota Public Radio. And I remember I had a, I had to go in and do a shift that day. They called everybody in. And I remember having to go over to St. Paul from the Minneapolis side. And mind you, 35 runs north-south, but you had to go east-west and they were rerouting traffic. I remember thinking, you know, with everything blocked off and rerouting, I remember thinking, how am I going to get over? I had to take like a really weird way to get over to NPR. And I remember just with news outlets, there's a lot of mass confusion and you have a lot of reporters that are out. And then of course they call in and I was in the, what they called the ICC, which was kind of like their ops or nerve center. So you have a lot of reporters that are calling in and filing reports, and of course you're recording, and then you're getting a hold of the newsroom to let them know that you've got certain bits on file and stuff like that. So it was, that day was very confusing. With 9/11, I was working over at Minnesota News Network, and I had actually, that was kind of a weird day because much like you, I was kind of out of it. I was discombobulated because I had torn all the ligaments in my left ankle, and I was kind of hopped up on Vicodin, and I was going to answer my alarm clock, and I had called in and left a message saying I was going to be late because I was getting up late because obviously I was kind of out of it because I was in extreme pain, but I was I had just come back from Green Bay, Wisconsin. And so I called in to let them know I was going to be late. I was having a hard time getting around and whatnot, and I was trying to come out of a Vicodin stupor. And I turned on the news. I was laying in bed, and I had the TV, you know, a TV in my room. and I turned on the TV, and you know how you're kind of coming out of a Vicodin stupor and you don't know if what you're seeing on TV is real or not? Well, that's when the second plane had hit the building, and I thought I was watching like a fictitious something on TV. And I had to stop and look because I didn't know if what I was watching was real or not. And then I got a call right away from work saying, you need to get in. And I'm like, I guess I do, yeah. So I hurried as fast as I could on one good foot to try and get in to work that day because it was just, yeah. So it's different being on the media side. You know, I've always had my issues with people saying, you know, things about the media and media spin and stuff like that, and how people think the media spins things. But you'd be surprised how much we play catch up with stuff in newsrooms and when things are happening. Yeah, it was just the feeling in downtown Minneapolis at that time was so surreal, because at the time they thought that not only was the Mall of America going to be hit next, but they also thought that the Federal Reserve in Minneapolis was going to be hit as well. And I was working downtown at the time. So there were people trying to run out of downtown Minneapolis. I remember trying to be downtown and trying to get something to eat for lunch, and people running around downtown like they thought that they were going to be bombed. It was weird. It was surreal. It was like a disaster movie.
Yeah, unbelievable times. Very strange stuff. Well, that's it for this week. We'll be back next Saturday with more of the supernatural stories, more of your personal accounts. Remember, you can email them in to me, dave@darknessradio.com. You can call and leave your message on our Voices from Beyond voicemail as well. We'll be back tomorrow. Colin Dickey is here, and we've got a myriad of really cool conversations we're going to have with him. His brand new book just came out. And we're going to be discussing his book and some very bizarre stories that he covers in that book. So I'm looking forward to that. That'll be tomorrow. And for some reason, my system is fighting me. There it is. The Unidentified Mythical Monsters, Alien Encounters, and Our Obsession with the Unexplained. Colin Dickey, our guest tomorrow, right here on Darkness Radio.